Hi, this is Nick Dragata of East of West, and you're listening to the 11 O'Clock Comics Podcast.
We just had to ask him back. Was that your fault, Amp, or did I suggest it?
No, I'm pretty sure I let the cake out.
Well, we're stuck, so might as well make the best of it, I guess.
Well, another week has passed. It's hard to believe.
It's like 4 days.
I don't know what it is. Whenever I see an image of Tony online, he makes me smile. I'm like, this motherfucker. I look at him like, whether you're holding up one of your books up, or you're just having fun, or you just got that big wide-eyed silly grin on, I'm like, I know this guy, and he makes me happy.
Describe me like I'm a special needs child.
No, you're...
adorable blanket. Oh, my God.
Stop. He's not special. Well, I guess he is special needs. He is, yeah.
Look at him out there succeeding, making his way.
He's going to visit you at the Shriners.
I think that's what I say. The only way Tony could ever be better is if he wore a fez.
Oh. Well, that's not going to happen. I'm going to have to get a full hair transplant.
But this is good. Wow, you're not losing your hair, are you?
It's all gone, buddy.
Really? So we're in the same boat.
That's why I wear this hat.
Oh, I just thought you liked hats.
No. I'm one of those. I'm a shame hat
kind of guy.
Oh. You know who has hair but wears a hat? Scotty Young.
Yeah, crazy.
Yeah.
Oh, it's bullshit.
Yeah. This is not bullshit, because it's 11 O'Clock Comics, episode 913, and I am the almost hairless Vince B.
Ooh, almost.
Well.
I'm David A. Price.
And in case
he's washing the car.
There you go. In case you didn't know, Jason is still on assignment. When will he be back? We don't know. Let's do an over-under. I say 6 weeks? I don't know. Mm-hmm. But in lieu of Jason, we got the better thing, and that is our boo, Tony Fleece. We don't even need to introduce him at this point. He's family. You've heard him on here a million times a couple days ago. Tony Fleece.
I'm back.
Yes.
Happy to be back. Thank you for having me back. Still a weird week, but we're moving on, you know?
Yes. Well, I don't know if you remember way, way, way back when, after maybe your first time on the show, and we said to you, you know what, you can always come back. Like, that wasn't bullshit. We were totally serious, because you just seem to, I don't know, have the right kind of madness that works for this place. Yeah.
Yeah, good fit.
I think so. I think I've been told that I've left a job after 3 years and had the person in charge say, yeah, I could tell it wasn't a good fit. I'm like, what? I spent 3 years doing your shit. How is it not a good fit? Whatever. But you know what is a good fit? If you're looking for omnibus editions, trade paperbacks, manga, graphic novels, all that pretentious stuff, if you're looking for comics that are bound, all you have to do is go to cheapgraphicnovels.com, because they have everything you want at the price you want to pay. Shit's going up all over the place. I looked at shipping. I had to send a box that weighed less than a half a pound, and the prices for shipping were ridiculous. And so everything's going up, but not at cheapgraphicnovels.com. Prices are going down, and after you place your first order, just to tie it all into shipping, I had an agenda. Tell Max that 11 O'Clock Comics sent you, and he will gift you free shipping on your second order. That's a big boon. It's a very important get. So cheapgraphicnovels.com.
Those omnibuses, those hardcovers.
Right, yeah. The shit's expensive. They're heavy, right? Well, they might as well be weightless, because you're not going to pay to ship them. That's when you order. Cheapgraphicnovels.com. Max is the best. Love him. Yes.
Yeah.
Fun times. I'm almost done with the Cyberforce. I got the first Cyberforce collection. Yeah, it's so much fun reliving those books.
I saw they're running another Kickstarter right now for, what is it, another Darkness?
Oh yeah.
Crank up those omnibuses. There's like Witchblade. They're on like the third or fourth Witchblade one. They're on the third Darkness.
I think they're all worth reading, but I didn't remember just how keyed into Velocity the origin of Cyberforce was. Like, she's everywhere in like the first four, six issues.
It's all
about Velocity. It's like, wow, this is an odd avenue, but I guess, I mean, it worked.
And they could tell they had a standout character there. The design was great. You know, when you think back on Cyberforce, you think of Ripclaw for sure, Velocity, you know, in that order, probably Stryker.
Yeah. But the thing about Velocity, realistically proportioned.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
She did not fit the image. Good girl / bad girl. It was she's very petite and very true to life. I mean, yeah.
She to be like,
she wasn't Killjoy, right? Like, Killjoy, with the gazong, like, it's wow, but yeah.
Or Danny from Next Men with the legs.
Yeah, or Fairchild, Fairchild came later, but there was a mold established by, you know, early Image and a lot of them. And Eric was guilty too. I mean, Eric likes his women of a certain stripe, let's say. So, yeah.
Would you read that Savage Dragon?
Yeah.
Boy, oh boy. What is this guy up to?
I don't know. But I know that it's all going to come to a head because I saw a cover. I saw a cover for a future issue in which everybody's versus Mickey Mouse.
What a maniac.
He is. He's crazy.
The Mickey Mouse is like the least of it in this issue. Like, this shit is bonkers.
Which one are you reading?
I'm looking at 269.
Okay. Nice. Okay. Yeah. So that's, I mean, it's crazy. But it's unfettered comic book making. Like, he's just doing whatever he wants to do. Like, Mickey Mouse just sticks his finger inside Maxine. Like, okay.
Crazy.
It's almost like I had that idea. If I was there, I probably would have not done that, but I would have thought about doing it because it's illegal to do it, you know.
Yeah.
These web witches who shoot webs out of their
machines.
They do you remember there was an Avatar character that had the same power? I think they were also called Web Witch.
Well, this is not a recent development in Savage Dragon. These characters have been around a long time.
Nuts.
I would say they predate Avatar.
Really?
Yes. They've been around a while.
Did Larson start going crazy like this? Was it happening at the very beginning? I feel like has been the last 10 years.
No, he's always been crazy. Remember Heavy Flow? The woman, the fat woman with the period that just blasted her enemies with menstrual discharge. Like, okay. That's. Yeah. I love Eric. If you can't have fun making your comic for 30 fucking years, what's the point? Right?
Yeah, I'd love to have with him, though.
I would like to see you take a similar journey with Feral.
No, Jesus.
I can tell you that I won't. I can almost guarantee that Web Witch will not show up in the pages of Feral.
Why not?
Some sort of web cat flopping around. What a mess.
But, I mean, I will lose my goddamn mind if next month there's another issue of Savage Dragon. I will just lose it. Because I can't... Huh?
He's really cranking.
He is. He's on the grind. But yeah. And it's the art is not suffering.
No.
So I mean that the claw is doing some magic, but you will hear me wherever you are. If we get four consecutive months with four consecutive Savage Dragon issues, I'll just be a steaming pile of ash. But at that point, I
think that Mickey Mouse is what he was waiting for to get him off of the. Yeah. he was uninspired. He's just waiting for Mickey Mouse to come into the public domain. So that
I think Eric takes current events very strongly.
Yeah.
Because the book has always been motivated by the political uncorrectness of the world. Like when Trump won, Malcolm went to Canada. I mean, so, and there were issues that were very praising to Obama, and then before that there was other political situations that he played up. Like, so he has his eye on current events that he kind of works into Savage Dragon, but I don't know, maybe he just took a look out the window and said, "What the? Why am I doing this?" And then Mickey said, "Over here, I can sexually abuse one of your finest creations." Okay, hop up here, little man. Here comes Maxine, and go.
Yes.
It's so bad, so good, but so bad. Yeah, he's back. So what else do we have? We have Uncanny Valley that came out a couple of days ago.
That's true. No, that was exciting. You know what I did was.
What kind of time machine am I in?
What do you mean? Came out. Yes, you're right.
It'll come out in a couple of hours.
Oh, hours, right. Yeah. It's, you know, the dial on my machine's not working right. So
that's
what I'm
saying.
It's a little foggy.
The Rip Hunter and Skeets connection.
Yes. Right. Not Skeets.
It's like that part in Howard's.
Skeets was with Booster part. Gold. It was, I know it was, but Skeets. Booster Gold. Is
Skeets, Skeets, Skeets. Is Dave all jazzed up? I mean, he must be over the moon.
Dave Price? What are you talking about?
No, Wachter.
Oh, where's the Dave Price? Dave Wachter.
We don't use those two words together.
Yes, Dave Wachter is... Dave Wachter is right now racing to finish an issue of this book and stay on, and I'm racing to write another one. We're trying to stay ahead of it. But yeah, he's pretty excited about it. He got his comps before I did, so he sent me a picture. He has a copy in his hand, so I'm pretty jealous of him. But I'll see them in a couple hours when I go and do all day long signing at Collector's Paradise in North Hollywood. I'm doing a special event where I'm like an employee for a day. So I'll get like, they'll give me a t-shirt and I'll ring people up and do all that stuff and sign books.
Interesting.
Yeah. Trying to change it up, keep things interesting.
Real undercover boss vibes.
Yeah. They'll be like, I don't like that Feral. I'll be like, oh, you didn't, did you?
Oh, you didn't, huh?
Well, you don't know who you're talking to, laddie.
Grab a customer by the neck. Oh, I'm going to get you fired. Yeah, go ahead.
I got like a fake mustache on.
That's it, yeah. Mustache.
Do you think that shit's real?
Yeah.
I don't either.
You don't think it's real?
No. No.
I mean, I feel like part of it's got to be
real. You're cynical.
No, I'm not cynical. It's just like they seem to find these people that maybe there's just an overabundance of needy people in the world, but they seem to find these people that are really good at what they're doing, but they also have very unfortunate situations at home.
Yes. Oh, no, you're right. You're right. Whether, you know, the car's broken down or someone is sick, someone has cancer, whatever. But it's you're not wrong about there being needy people in the world, but again, it also goes back to, and it's nice to, it is, when I was watching the show, when it first coming on here in the States, I haven't seen any episodes lately, but I enjoyed seeing those that may not know, if they never worked in the trenches before, now they know what it's like, but to actually come face to face with, because the CEOs, the bosses, they're getting the salary, and we see it all the time with corporations and their profits and people up top getting way richer, and those that they benefit from are getting way lesser, and so when there's an opportunity like that, be it forced or manipulated. At least there are moments in my mind where I I take it at face value and just enjoy it for what it is. I try not to pull the threads, because there are, you can start to think things through and see how, especially with the way we have other reality shows, and we know that
exactly
the people behind the scenes are forcing one person to be the vindictive, cheating, evil one, and everybody's rooting against it. And so I know that they're obviously doing this because they're trying to entertain an audience and keep them glued to the TV. But it's, you know, not everything in a Disney movie is real either. So and that can get to me as well. So it kind of depends on the mood, I guess.
Let's talk about some comics. We do our drink roll call? I don't think we did.
I thought you mentioned the beer was.
No. Okay. I'm drinking Sam Adams because it's the elixir of life. It gives me life. I don't understand why they consider it an import. It's not, but it's always in the import section.
In Pennsylvania.
Okay, that's so okay. It's so stupid. Yeah, I drink imported beer, yo. It's Sam Adams. I don't know if you heard of it. But anyway, I love it.
What about you, Tony?
I'm having chamomile tea. I still haven't been able to shake that slight cold that I had several days ago.
It's been days.
I know. This is a tough one. I'll have it
later. And it was great seeing you, or damn, I missed you Saturday at the shop.
Well, I hope that we had a wonderful interaction seeing each other in person. And hopefully the neighbor was there.
Hey.
Maybe this Saturday outing.
Maybe.
Yeah, but I'm a chamomile tea.
Nothing wrong with that. Yeah. Well, since, you know, Tony's double dipping, I will as well. I am enjoying some Basil Hayden dark rye.
Nice.
Still very delicious.
You know what I don't hear this episode, Vince, is your cat.
Because she's being scolded.
Oh, she's because else?
You weren't around. No, she knocked. She's right there, but she knows she done wrong.
Yeah, point
she, at her. She knocked my beer over going into the first episode, and I had to scramble to get it all, and like on the computer desk, knocked the beer over. It's because she doesn't care. I don't want to bring it up. She's just in trouble. But you know what I want to bring up?
Yes.
Okay. So I have been very lax on this Keanu Reeves Berserker series. Mm-hmm. I didn't touch it. But if you told me that Steve Scrocci and Keanu were going to kind of team up on a Lovecraft-inspired Berserker story, well, I'm going to read it, right? Yeah. But I missed it when it first came out. So solicited, not too long ago, was the Boom Pen and Ink version of Berserker, Poetry of Madness, written and drawn by Steve Scrocci. And it's a great story. It's you know the deal. The Berserker's immortal. And in this incarnation, he is the protector of the King of Atlantis. And the king gets bamboozled by a magic user who ends up rising Cthulhu. And the Berserker has to defend the realm against a very nasty magician and Cthulhu. But it's 100% wall-to-wall carnage. It's just the Berserker killing everyone and everything in as many variations as your mind can conceive. But being the black and white pen and ink edition, I found it a bit hard to decipher. Because Scrocci's art is very, very detailed, and he is a master of the contour. He knows when to change the width of his line depending on where are within the picture, the picture plane, objects fall, like things that are close to the viewer are usually thicker line, things that are receding into the background are very thin line. So he's great at delineating objects, but Steve doesn't use a whole lot of really dark blacks. Not a lot. So a lot of the detail in this, with the massive carnage of the berserker lopping off heads, punching through people's chests, limbs are separated from torsos aplenty. It wasn't until the color, I saw it in color, which is, what's the name of the collection, David?
Bloodlines.
Bloodlines. And I was like, oh, damn. I think Scratchy needs or benefits from Dave Stewart, an excellent colorist, that can translate effectively his shapes and what's going on. Because black and white, it looks very good. Once the color art is applied, oh my God. Like, it becomes a totally new beast. Do you feel the same way now?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, especially when you have rivers of blood.
That's the thing. I mean, if it was, and yeah, we've read black and white. I mean, hell, Savage Sword. I mean, you've got so many violent black and white magazines that we can refer to. But something like this, because of how intense and severe the violence is, and it's not like you're getting dozens and thousands of hues. It's pretty simple in how everything's colored, but it still just makes Steve's work pop.
And I think that's the deal. Scratchy went in knowing that this was going to be in color. So he allowed the color artist room to do what they do, right? Within the confines of shapes, Scratchy doesn't go too crazy with the noodling. Like, a lot of his shapes are very, they're barren. And so he allows the colorist to do what they do. One of the good things about this Pen and Ink edition is it's annotated.
Oh, nice.
There's a running commentary by Steve. I did not know that Steve was a storyboard artist for the majority of the Wachowski.
No. I thought, of course you did, for the Matrix comics as well.
I didn't read any Matrix comics, did I?
No. I don't know if you did. I finally have the collection, but I didn't know you didn't know
he I was didn't know a that no.
storyboard no. artist.
For I didn't know Matrix it. Movie. And he fashions the Berserker armor from the Dracula armor in Francis Ford Coppola's version.
That's very apparent.
And I think that Dracula armor is a magnificent creation. And I'm glad that he feels the same way. But it's just like, he it's funny in spots. Wonders why he bit off so much in certain scenes. But like, the one scene that really translates far better in color than it does in black and white is when the plant cage comes up around the berserker and he's trapped, he's imprisoned, and then the priest raises Cthulhu. You don't get the sense that, I mean, it looks like just spiky stone in the black and white version. But in the color, there's no mistaking the fact that these are vines and tendrils. And I think it was a gamble to portray Cthulhu in this fashion, because it is non-traditional Cthulhu. Tony, it doesn't have the beard-o tentacles. It's more of a plant-based, viney-type Cthulhu. It's a risk. I think so. But I thought it was great.
Still sitting here trying to drive back all the way to the beginning of Steve Skros and the Wachowskis, because I feel like, did they work together at Marvel before the Matrix? That's the question mark.
Do you know Steve?
I do not know him. He did the cover for Uncanny Valley, though.
Because I'm wondering if you know something about pronouncing his name, because I always thought it was Scroce.
Like Jim Croce?
Yeah.
Well, I do not know. I'm just saying it the way that I say it. I figure if we both say it, one of us will be right.
That will cover the bases. That's awesome.
But so they did the Matrix together. But then why I knew about it for sure was because A, he was on the Matrix comics, like Dap said. But then when the Wachowskis did Early Man Publishing, they did his book and they did Jeff Darrow's book, both of them whom had worked on the Matrixes. That's what the that comic book company was about, was they were like, we like these guys' comics. We like their work. We're going to make their comics.
As far as I know, and I haven't, like I said, I haven't looked into the collection, so I don't know if there's anything as far as back matter goes. But according to the Matrix Wiki, Steve was a conceptual designer and storyboard artist for actually all four movies, even Resurrections. So, yeah. So, and he's a member of the Matrix crew, which I'm guessing so is, I'm sure Jeff is as well, but I'm guessing that's just the founding members from the whole thing. And yeah, I have a feeling it was, it was initially maybe just a job that, you know, just being a storyboard artist for the Wachowskis and then friendship blossomed from that. But I don't know what the connection might have been beforehand.
Him on the show. Love to hear what that guy
is. Steve or Keanu?
Well, either way.
Yes.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
See, we get together to talk about this book.
You know, I until Reddit, I didn't think there was anyone that found displeasure in Keanu Reeves, but apparently there's a bunch of people on Reddit.
People are assholes.
Yeah. You know, Zionists, like whatever. I don't know what to tell you.
What's your favorite Keanu?
Bill and Ted.
I like him in Parenthood. Oh, wow, yeah, I forgot he was in Parenthood.
His boyfriend.
That's right.
Joaquin Phoenix was like Martha Plinth's little brother, and he was jacking off all the time.
Wait, wasn't that My Own Private Idaho?
No, that was River Phoenix.
Oh, okay, yeah. Gotcha.
Sorry.
It was a Phoenix. But how, I mean, I it makes me chuckle a little bit that Keanu comes to comics and his sequential art placeholder is an unstoppable, immortal killing machine. So it's like, I think we kind of saw that in the movies, but I'll have more of it. It's cool.
Sure, yeah.
For me, I want to say the Matrix just by default. I don't want to say I really, really like it because it's so fucking dark. I thought it was great in River's Edge. I am a little surprised Vince didn't say Bram Stoker's Dracula.
No, I don't think he was very good in that.
Oh, no, okay.
No, he was okay.
You're right.
Yeah, I mean, look at the rest of the cast. Come on. But as far as being a fish out of water, stuck in an unwinnable situation, okay, he was fine, right? But, to tell you the truth, I think The Matrix 1 is almost perfect.
Yeah, I agree.
And then the franchise squandered whatever goodwill they had with 2, and they totally burned it to the ground with 3. At the end of the first Matrix movie, I thought, oh, damn, we are going to get superheroes in the next Matrix. They could do anything. We're going to be like fucking the Avengers. It's going to be amazing. And then Matrix 2 came out, and we spend like a half an hour on a stretch of road. Like,
Having a rave.
The rave is the worst. Don't bring that up.
I'll still find things to enjoy in the second and third movie. A lot of it may also have something to do with the soundtrack, but there are moments that I can appreciate, especially when Smith is on screen. I really, really, I don't know what the consensus is, whether I don't remember how many people yayed or nayed it, but I did like Resurrections. I did like the fourth movie because it
I haven't seen it
was familiar. I just I it, it actually it kind of felt more like a sequel, the sequel that we should have gotten after all these years between the first and the fourth one. If we didn't have two and three, obviously they wouldn't have had as much of a story to tell with the fourth one, but the fourth one does rely so much on the first and plays homage to a lot of it. But I don't think you'll, I mean, you sat through the second and third. I don't think you'll hate the fourth one, Vince, but I mean, again, you can't go home again. And yes, sure. Every once in a while, I'll still pop in the first one just because I enjoy it so much.
I'm very annoyed that I didn't see the fourth one in theaters because I feel like, I mean, that's how messed up those other two movies were, where another Matrix came out and I was just like, eh, I don't have time, you know, but now I feel like if I'm watching it at home, I'm not getting the full, you know, I'm not getting the full Matrix out of it. But also, was it a COVID movie? Did it come out the same time that we weren't going to theaters at all?
Yeah, I think it was on Max. I think it premiered on Max the same way like Dune did. I might be mistaken, but I'm pretty sure it did. And then actually, I think last month or earlier this year, I was just doing something around the house, cleaning shit around the living room and whatnot, and it came up on the Hulu front page, and I was like, fuck it, you know what? I just let it play.
Hell yeah.
I'm far more likely to go to the theater if the movie is like 30 or 40 years old than as opposed to a new release. Like, I have no interest in new movies by and large, but if you say, oh yeah, you know, they're bringing, you know, the Warriors or Conan down to the cheap cinema, you know, I'll go to see, or the drive-in, I'll go to see a movie I love on the big screen far quicker, almost exclusively than new movies. I really don't care
to see. I would argue then that you're not going to love any new movies then if you get introduced to them just on TV.
Well, I mean, yeah, but, I mean, the chances are good I probably won't.
You know what I saw that I know you'll enjoy?
What's that?
Immaculate with Sydney Sweeney.
Oh, nice.
Nunsploitation.
Oh.
It's a fun giallo. It's there's a couple times they pull punches, but a lot of it they do not pull punches. There's no way to advertise something as like this is a giallo movie because people don't know what the fuck that is,
right?
And it's not like a turn on for most filmgoers. But boy, oh boy, when I saw what they were doing, I was like, oh shit!
I think you're doing me a disservice when you say I won't like movies. I like plenty of movies that I see on TV. I don't have to see them on the big screen.
Right.
Yeah. I want to see Late Night with the Devil. Like, I'll watch that on TV. I'm good.
I just missed that last night. My boys went, and I was home nursing my cold. They said it was good, though.
I think it's on Shudder.
I believe it is.
Yeah. So why would you go somewhere to see it?
Yeah, popcorn.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I mean, you get like a full dinner if you go to some movie theaters, but yeah.
Stop. He said it so matter of factly. Take a popcorn. Like, why else would you go?
They have popcorn, and I promise I won't check my phone the whole time.
Awesome. And you have a friend that always reaches to the bottom of the bucket.
That's right.
There you go. So what else? Let's talk about some comics. What else do we have? What do you have, Tony? You have anything you've been reading that's just setting your world on fire?
Let me see. I haven't finished reading it yet, but I started reading it, and the artwork really impressed me. And it's a new company, so I'm going to tell you guys about it. It's from Magma
Comics. Hot Magma.
Just came out this week. It's Magma Publishing is all my homies from IDW. Remember when IDW was founded? It was like a bunch of people from Wildstorm, sort of like forging their own path and making their own company. This is like that, but from IDW. So it's like a second generation publishing company, Magma Comics. It's Denton Tipton and Bobby Kurnow and Joel Elad and Mike Ford and all these people that are like IDW mainstays. But they made this book called The Principles of Necromancy, Jackson Lansing and Colin Kelly, writing duo. And like I said, I've only read the very beginning of it, but the artwork in it Very impressive, and it's a first-time artist, this guy named Iman Winkle. And it's a super gory book, and he draws gore very beautifully in like a fun sort of like, if you told me that it was an Avatar comic, I'd be like, hell yeah. Like, in the good way, you know?
See, now I'm doubly pissed off.
Why is that?
Because that got my attention. When I was going through the previews, when the first issue was solicited, that book got my attention. And I'm like, oh, damn, this looks really good. And I dropped at the bottom of the page, and it said, first issue, $4.99. So I'm like, okay, I guess I'm not getting you.
And
yeah, first issue was $4.99, but...
I'm holding it in my hand. It says $3.99 right on the cover.
Well, maybe I was looking at a special cardstock cover thing. But
maybe.
The second issue and third issue... which I saw in the previews, were $3.99. So I'm like, God damn it, now I got to get the trade. Because it did look very attractive to me. That book specifically, I'm like, wow, title, subject matter, I need this.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, the cover is super great. I met the guy, Iman Winkle, at WonderCon, and I talked to him a little bit because I was like, this kid is rad. His first comic, like, I'd be excited. I would love to work with this guy at some point. So he draws excellent gore.
Nice.
But yeah, like, I don't know too much about the story, but I trust Colin Kelly and Jackson Lansing. They know how to put together a comic book. And also, it's only $3.99. So I wonder if a bunch of people complained that they had $5 comics as a new publisher and they relented. I wonder what happened.
It's ridiculous. I'm going through the previews, and remember way back when we said, hey, they should do SCP comics. I'm like, okay, cool. So there's a publisher out there that's actually doing an SCP comic. But for a 24-page comic, it's $9.99. I'm like, what are you doing? Who's going to buy this fucking thing? Nobody's going to buy it. No, there's nobody on the planet that would spend $10 for a 24-page floppy. I mean, and you go through random publishers. It seems to be now the baseline is $4.99 for comics, and it's really scary when you get like 24 pages $5.99, or there's some that are like $7.99 for maybe a little bit more than 24 pages. Like just say 32, seven. Like you're insane. You're never gonna move these books. Nobody's gonna buy them. And it's disheartening because more often than not, I don't click with whatever it is, but there are some titles that I'm just like, wow, that looks really good. But, and it's not only comics, it's graphic novels too. Like a 64 page graphic novel, $24.99. You're done. I will not even consider you. And it was Peter Kowalski, which hurt my heart. Because I love Peter Kowalski, but even I don't think Peter Kowalski's worth $25 for like 60-some pages. Nah. Maybe I'm getting too old and too cheap. Maybe that's what the problem is. But
well,
I think...
it's happening at the same time as things are getting more expensive, too.
So. Yes, yes. And it's driving me a little bit batty, because there are books that I want to buy, but at the price point, nope, not doing it.
Yep. Anyway, it's $3.99, not $4.99 as they had advertised originally. So anybody out there that's thinking about picking it up,
I want it.
Well, Comic Shop came out this week, I think.
Damn.
It was last week.
Maybe they
got it.
I doubt it. Do they have a an order bucket on their website?
I don't know. MagmaComics.com. Comics with an X.
Oh, nice.
Is the underground.
That's who they are. They're hardcore. We'll find out. While we're doing that.
So the other half of that Berserker Bloodline special, a little story called Fallen Empire, written by Mattson Tomlin, with art by Rebecca Isaacs, who I haven't seen in a minute, and colored by D. Cunife, letters by Becca Carey. And this one is the opposite of having anything to do with Atlantis. It pretty much takes place primarily in the desert centuries ago. in a in the kingdom of Olos, and our berserker friend is brought to us in this story by way of being a slave and sent to the gladiator pits to fight. He won't fight. He gets beheaded, and then a short while later is reborn, and they're not quite sure how the hell this happened. There are stories of a monster who couldn't be killed, but this king figures that this guy looks like a man, and as such, he'll do my bidding. Pledge your life. And my man is just like, hell no. So he gets put into the dungeon, and he's there for a good long while. His rage is sated over the years, but over the months, rather. But the queen has ulterior motives, and she gets the berserker out of the dungeon, out of the kingdom, and they escape. To go where, I really don't know. But she is quite manipulative, and the berserker is a good listener, and he pays attention to when someone wants to tell stories. It's not as nonstop violent as the first story in this collection appears to be. There are definitely some more quiet moments. It's a nice juxtaposition, but it's very beautifully illustrated, I think. I kind of guessed the surprise early on, but then as the story continued, I says, okay, maybe that was meant to look deliberate, and it doesn't detract from it, but it really wasn't a surprise. Again, it's a revenge tale, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's well done. Like I said, it is the second of the Berserker 2023 specials, which is why it's in a collection like this. And the collection also includes some variant covers and whatnot. But I thought, if you've never read, because I did read the first couple of issues of Berserker and then I just went away. If you're not reading the regular series, which I think there's three trades now, there's still something just to get from these two stories, especially if you're a fan of Lovecraft. But I thought there were just nice little breaks from anything else that we've been reading, whether it's, you know, the Energon universe or anything from anybody that we're currently reading. It was not saying it was a palate cleanser, but they were a nice break from the usual.
There you go, Tony. Did you find out if they have a web order system?
You can't buy it on their website, but I did get to the bottom of it. The A cover's $3.99, the B cover's $4.99.
Ah. Oh, they're doing that DC cardstock crap. Okay, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the A cover is, it does feel like self-cover.
But
I know
if,
you hate that.
I don't like self-cover, but if it's $3.99, fine. Yeah. You got to expect that. There's not many Todd McFarlanes out there, right?
That's true. No. Few of us are, you know?
You will be soon.
One of these days.
Just remember your friends.
Just saying. How could I forget?
Yeah, okay.
2 weeks ago.
How many podcasts have you been on this week?
32,000 on this planet alone.
I know this is unprecedented, but you guys might enjoy hearing about this. I went on this podcast called the Comics and Chronic Podcast, where it's these three guys that are high. It's like this, except the guys are just lit.
Is it on YouTube? Is it a video podcast?
I don't think they're on YouTube.
Oh, okay. All right.
I should go look. I just listened to the audio version because they interviewed me, and then the two following weeks, they read Stray Dogs and then they read Local Man. And so I was like, well, I got to listen to these high son of a bitches read my comics. It was just delightful. I mean, obviously, I was interested from jump because they were, you know, talking about my stuff. But I loved hearing them just giggle and joke and have, you know, say hysterical things. It was great. Comics and Chronic podcast, highly recommended. Nice. Listen to it. Okay, yeah, listen to this.
Yeah. You know, the Chronic is not a bad idea at this point. Yeah,
it is not.
Do instead of the drink roll call, do the dank roll call.
Oh,
it would be better for our constitutions and our waistlines.
Probably.
This is true.
Yeah. Got to give you a tip of the hat, though. I didn't finish it, but I started the Local Man Bad Girl special.
Uh-huh.
I thought it was, foolish me. Okay, it's on me. I thought it was going to be like a Babe Watch, just a slight, just a titillating tie-in, but it's not. It actually has weight. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's important content.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, we wanted to try and make it past the Bechdel test, but it proved nearly impossible since so much of our story is about this guy, you know, and part of the Bechdel test is if two women are in the room in a conversation together, they're not talking about a guy. We didn't pass that part of it, but I think we passed a few other good chunks of it. But yeah, we wanted to make something that was equal parts Bad Girl comic and Local Man comic, you know, that still felt. Can you hear this ice cream truck? It's like they're circling my.
It's room. Beautiful.
It is.
Or deadly, depending on who's driving it. Yeah. But so that you didn't answer my questions when I texted you and I said, hey, I'm reading this Tim Seeley / Kill Your Idols one shot thing. Which felt
it's from the Image anthology, the same way that Dutch was.
All right. So that's why I've never seen it, because I didn't buy into the Image anthology. But
It
feels a lot like Local Man.
It could have been around the same time that we were making early Local Man that he was working on that. I know it was sort of like during while we were making that they were putting together that Image anthology stuff.
Okay. Have you read it?
I have not read it.
It's, you remember the whole, of course you do, Rub the Blood with the whole Cabot and the revitalized or reviving dead superheroes. Well, there one called the Blue Coat comes back to life and he triggers Cassie's serial killer sense because he's returning to life and he killed someone. So they have explored all of the avenues of the serial killer, and now her and Vlad were just sitting around looking for something to do, and this guy comes on the scene, and you got Super Patriots in it, Cabot, so it's like a, you know, it's a feel good 90s Image tie-in book, but by way of / which is Local Man in a sense, right? Where you're using these concepts and characters from that we love from the 90s Image books, but it's a totally new thing.
Yes, Seeley, when he starts, he puts out so much work and is so prolific that once he gets in a lane, he will just crank and do shit like that. Like he did this thing you're talking about. He did Local Man. He did
Forge of Destiny.
What's the Patton Oswalt? Minor Threats. Oh, he did the alternates of Minor Threats, which is like another take on 90s. Image and Vertigo comics, and then I was like, when we were planning Bad Girls, I was like, let's do it as a swimsuit issue. Every page is a pinup, but we actually tell a story through it. And he was like, oh, I'm already doing that with the Chaos thing. And I was like, you are doing every 90s thing at the same time. he really cranks out a lot of work, that guy.
So
Local Man's the one we make together. I think I'm going to be late on issue 10. I have five more pages to finish tonight.
What?
That doesn't seem like it's going to work.
It's like, did Matt Feasel draw these pages? Why are they all stick figures? What's happening?
Yeah, I can just turn in the layouts and then, because like it's due on a certain day and then it goes to print like, you know, 2 weeks from now or something. So there's time in between. And I have done before where like I turn in an unfinished page and then when we're going to print, I go like, oh, hold on, I got to fix that page. And then I send them the right one, you know, like I'm turning in my homework late. So I think there's a way to still make it come out on time. But I'm definitely going to have to send an email today that says, I planned too much feral signings and now this book's not going to be done in time. It's all catching up to me.
It's issue 10.
Yeah, they're probably on board.
Right.
It's an image book. It's expected.
Well, that's the...
Unless you're out watching.
The image thing we could do is just not finish it. Would be the true homage to the early days of Image, if we just left everyone hanging.
Yep. Do a couple of back pages where you're advertising these really, really cool books that you have planned and then never produce them.
Oh, we've already done that. We advertised this and Crosshairs in the last Stray Dogs issue, and Crosshairs is a book I'm doing with Chris Moreno, but boy, we have not even started that.
Oh, are you gonna do a jump ahead issue like Wildstorm did with like Authority and Stormwatch and that, well, Stormwatch and
stop. Yeah, they, right now.
They did, bro. Okay. All right.
I didn't hear any of that. What did you actually say?
Nothing. David was reminding us all of the very popular Images of Tomorrow
event
that ran across the pages of Brigade and Stormwatch and Supreme and a couple other ones where they all skipped ahead to issue 25. Wouldn't it be incredible if a current Image comic did that, though?
Yeah. I think Eric has it in him.
Well, Eric redid the Jim Lee drawn Savage Dragon 13.
Right, yeah, because he wanted to. Yes, he did.
Well, he wanted to draw all the issues, or because he had an issue with.
No, he wanted to draw all the issues.
Okay,
you got to know that Larson's like. Whenever Mark McFarlane are in the same room, he's probably like, this fucking guy. He drew like 3.5 issues.
Two things can be true at the same time.
I'm still waiting to see what that... Remember that Kirkman comic that just is supposed to be like from the future or whatever? Blood?
What?
Spore?
Yes!
Remember it was Kirkman and like Brian Otley. And it was just like a single issue that came out and it was on newsprint. It was called like Blood Scorn. It came out like probably 4 years ago.
Not to be confused with the Capullo drawn thing that Evans reminded me of recently.
Haunt.
Yes.
Haunt. Yeah.
Who is? Well, I told you, Haunt is front and center in the new Extended Spawn universe.
Hell yeah!
Right. Yeah,
member of the Scorched. Yeah. All right, everybody. Hey, thank you for being here with us. We love you so much. Do yourself a favor and come back next time. But before you do that, check out our sponsor, cheapgraphicnovels.com. Get omnibus editions, trade paperbacks, manga, OGNs at a fraction of that number that's printed on the back. You'll look at it and laugh. You'll point at it and say, ha ha. Because not only are you saving on the retail, you're also saving on shipping because you're not paying shipping on your second order. You will get an email receipt from your order and you're going to reply to that saying 11 o'clock comics sent me and you're going to get free shipping on your next order. Also check out our Patreon page, patreon.com/11oclockcomics. Whole lot of shaking going on. Two tiers, very simple, very easy. We love you. I have a lot of things to talk about, but all right, let me separate these books. We talked about Ohatmu and Who's Who last week. With Matt Allison. Yep. Did you know that there is an Ohatmu-esque book being published at IDW for the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
No.
It's called the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Source Book. There have been two issues to date. They are glossy covered, 100-page issues for $7.99. Now, they're not as granular as the Ohatmu. There are no stats for every character. There's no, like, power meter or any of that stuff. What you get is you get character portraits and panels and stuff and text. A bunch of text, like Alloplex. Has a nice portrait of Alloplex and a massive page of text. So if there's a character within the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles universe that you would like to know more about, just hang on, because I believe there's going to be 3 total of these source books, and I'm sure that they're going to collect it into a handy-dandy shelf collection that you could just peruse to your heart's content. If you sat down in your favorite chair and started reading a single source book, I think it would take you a good 3 hours to read this thing. Like, there's a lot of text in here. Massive amount of text. So, value for the dollar, right? And, you know what else I've been reading? You'll never guess, so I'm just going to tell you. Night Stalkers from Marvel. Did you ever read the Night Stalkers run?
Here and there. Not the entire run, though.
It is quintessential 90s Marvel comics. Because it's Garney, but it's also Tom Palmer over Garney. Yes. So it is freaking beautiful. Not all of the issues are Palmer Garney, but a good number of them are. So just for example, issue 6, The Punisher appears. Issue 7, Ghost Rider. Issue 8, Morbius. It's like, can it get more 90s? I think not. But and the whole thing about it is, they keep talking about the nine are important. Did you read the Marvel, I don't know what you want to call it, but they didn't have a name for it. Maybe they should. Like, it was that really creepy corner of the Marvel Universe where you had Night Stalkers, and you had the Darkhold book, and then you had Ghost Rider, and you had Morbius, and they were all crossing over.
Yeah, Midnight Suns.
Right, but they didn't. It should have been called something else. Like, Midnight Suns was a book, but anyway, Midnight Suns
was a book. After
right, the book, but Blade's an asshole, a complete and utter asshole. There's no, I mean, I don't know anyone who would walk out of an issue of any of these things thinking, "Oh, that Blade's a pretty nice guy." He's a complete idiot and an asshole. Hannibal King is tortured. Let's see, Frank Drake is. He's got the gun called Linda. That's an exorcist gun. That's just beautiful, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm reading these, and I'm thinking, man, not all comics in the 90s were bad. These are pretty damn good, and I got them for $1 a piece. So I'm currently making my way through the Night Stalkers run. It's a good place to be.
Excellent.
Yeah. But yeah, you're right. The Ron Garney and Palmer is just... gorgeous.
Yeah.
Gorgeous.
Oh, man. No, that brings back some memories. And, oh, man, and bringing it back to North Carolina that we talked about last week real quick. My father knows or knew Mark Texiera.
What?
Yeah, because a couple nights a week, my father helped out an old family friend. He worked part-time at a liquor store in Tuckahoe, New York, and... it's basically across the street from the Tuckahoe train station. So Tex would come either, if it wasn't all the way home north, well, that was actually later. Every time he was coming back from the bullpen, he'd stop in, pick up a bottle of something, and head home. And I guess Tex and Dad, well, I don't guess. Tex and Dad were obviously talking one night. Dad calls me, I'm home, and... he says, hold on a second, I got somebody who wants to talk to you. And next thing you know, I'm talking to Mark Texiera. And I'm like, I don't think I was driving yet. So I mean, this is how long, and of course I embarrassed myself and probably him because I mentioned fucking Power Lords. But he ends up leaving my father some actual page size Xerox copies of a story that, because I was talking about inking. So he says, I'll leave something so you can practice with. And it ends. And I had never seen this story before until maybe a year or so later when it was finally published as the Frank Miller, John Romita Jr., Al Williamson, Daredevil Man Without Fear. And but yeah, so while we were down there, Dad actually asked about Tex, because we haven't seen Tex, I think, at a con, Vince, in a while. And I mentioned it. I says, you know, we used to see Tex at the cons, but I haven't seen him lately, so I don't know if he still lives in New York. He lived upstate for a while, or if he and the wife, or if they're still together, if they moved somewhere else. But yeah, so that was a weird segue. So that'll be my new travels then, because the book I wanted, the issue I wanted to talk about, I wanted to give it some time, because I absolutely loved it. Caleb knows what I'm talking about, but in your travels, just make good memories with those you love.
How about that? Nice.
Boy, I don't know if I can do better than that.
Probably not.
yeah, my stack of comics here is just like all half read or just thumbed through. I got like I've been collecting stuff at all these signings and conventions I've been at, but nothing really gets read anymore. I just work. So yeah, make time to tell the people that mean something to you that they're important to you this week.
Nice. Next time you see Agnes, you say, I have a buddy who thinks you're very important.
Yeah, you're very important to him.
Yes. Those words exactly. She'll know who it is.
Well, I'm not being a pig. She's very important to me.
Yeah, that's nice.
Nice. So everybody, hey, go buy yourself some comics, read them, talk about them, come back here, talk about them again, and do yourself a favor and say good night. Intro's a little long. I forgot it was this long. It's coming. So I save it for tonight. David, I'm sorry. That was far too long. It's going to get us condemned to the ghettos of music thievery. That was madness, in case you didn't know. Bottle caps on the floor. You don't have to go the whole distance.
Are you kidding me?
Did you see David?
No.
He's ruining it.
No, I was...
Distract him, Tony. Put your pants down.
Say, oh, my God. Please. David. I was going to say, if we never have a music outro on the Friday show, we will at the show in the earlier in the week.
Yeah, you know why? Because I'm dumb and I remember to cue it up in between.
Yes.
It's totally the reason.
I know.
It's 100%. 100%. All right, we love you people. Tell them you love them. We're out of here.
Them out of here.
Wow.
That's it for that one.